I'd like to thank Downshift Golf for sponsoring the podcast for a few episodes. Who knows, maybe more. But anyhow, this golf swing aid focuses in on the weight transfer and really gets you honed in on what your lower half is doing. It's got a sleek kind of skateboard looking design with a little balance beam underneath, so you can really make sure the weight is fully transferred to your right or left foot. And this really gives a good indication of how your leg work is looking for the golf swing. So anyways, thank you Downshift Golf for coming up with such a cool product. Thanks for backing the podcast. We talked to Charles Howell about it a little bit. He's got one. Anyhow, cheers Downshift, stay tuned.
And this is Will Wilcox.
There you go. There you go. Yes!
Jim Renner on the 15th hole. His third shot, you bet.
All righty. Well, everybody, welcome to another episode of Deer Time. I'm super excited to have Charles Howell III for episode 41. One of my favorite golfers of all time and just one of the all-around nicest players I've ever met. So anyways, thanks for coming on, dude.
Well, listen, hey, thanks for having me. It's been a while since we first met and, playing obviously some tour events together and whatnot. So, appreciate you having me on here.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been since I stopped playing in 21, started doing this pretty much immediately. And I really enjoy catching up with everybody. And it's a good way to kind of stay in the fray a little bit. I'm going to do some caddying next year. So maybe I'll run into you out there. But how's everything going in the off season? Feeling good?
Everything's been good, actually. So, our last event on Live was essentially into the first week of November. So, it's nice to have some time at home. My son, he's 11. He plays competitive junior golf, I should say. So,
yeah, you're a caddy.
Yeah, been caddying for him, helping him, yelled at by him. Yep. All the stuff that, but you get it. You remember those days.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. How are you as a golf dad? I mean, do you just let him obviously you have all the knowledge in the world. Do you try to let him absorb as much as he can on his own, or are you in there, pretty heavy, or how's that?
It's actually really hard. And for all the golf dads out there, I get it. He walked a balance, right? Like, there needs to be some level of foundational technical work done, but at the same time, still a bit, artsy and play the game. Finally, he's the dead opposite of me. I can sit on the driving range all day long with a video camera, and he hates it. He wants to putt and chip and play golf.
Yeah.
And he couldn't be more opposite to me. So it's probably a good learning experience for me, to be honest, to see how a kid sees the game and see it through their eyes. But it's been fun.
Yeah, I mean, is he a big like YouTube? Because so many people learn maybe too much from YouTube. Like, I know he learned how to swing the golf club by watching Tiger Woods videos on YouTube. Like, do you try to steer him away from, getting oversaturated with information and things like that?
It's funny. I mean, it's funny you mentioned YouTube, and see, like, this new age kid, right? Like, what they do on the internet and all this kind of stuff. And my son, he loves Dustin Johnson. So, like, mm-hmm. I'll see him on there. He's watching Dustin Johnson videos. He loved Rory McIlroy. So he's watching those videos. And you're right. It's funny. They learn through watching golf swings and mannerisms too. It's funny some of the things they'll pick up. I guess they'll be seeing the
game. You got a bit of a Rory strut?
Not quite. Rory does have a strut. You're right. He's got a good one.
Yes, he does. The DJ videos, those can get you into, with that bowed left wrist, hopefully it's taken too much, but McIlroy, you can definitely learn a lot from that swing. Who doesn't love a good DJ swing? But I would definitely be like, that bowed left wrist, dude, that's seems kind of God given to me.
I agree with you. That's reserved for the select few. And I tell my son, Chase, you're not that athletic. So let's stick here a little bit more neutral.
Yeah, definitely. You're obviously a student of the game. And you were a David Ledbetter disciple for the longest time, weren't you?
Yeah. So really from age, 9 or 10, I started down there. for many years. So absolute.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I was wondering, and we can go chronologically in a second, but I mean, do you think of a lot, like when you're swinging the club, are you thinking of a lot, like from the ground up? It seems like you do a lot of, you know, I don't know, leg work. It seems like you're really thinking about using your, you know, footwork and leg work a lot. I don't know, from what I've watched you, do.
Great question. So when I started with lead as a kid, this is the days of the old VHS camera, and lead would set it up, and legit, I mean, it was like paint by numbers. It was, okay, here's address. Okay, here's, you know, let's say checkpoint one, whatever you want to call it. Here's halfway back. And it was all, how do we make these look? So it was very arms and upper body driven, I would say.
Okay.
Later in my career, did I start understanding better the ground, how to use the ground, footwork and leg work, how they contribute. I think early on, I made a bit of a mistake not understanding that as much.
Yeah.
I was much more position oriented, but I didn't quite understand how they all came together and what actually made the position. So probably a little bit positional, if I'm being critical. But as my career progressed on it and started learning more, then I could understand, okay, there's a certain engine to this thing and how we power it that makes the positions for us.
Yeah. So would you say you became more like feel over time then?
I would say so. Yeah. I mean, I think we all get to where eventually there's two or three tendencies that all of us have, right? And mm-hmm. and you, I'm sure even from, like, even you could say, yeah, these are the couple things I look for. I'm going to manage those as best I can and then go play golf. And now, like, going back to, let's say, helping my son out, it's a little bit different because they're, when they're young, they're trying to build a technical foundation, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But get a bit older and you played this game, let's say in a college level or professional level, where it does need to get boiled down to two or three things that you're going to watch. And then that allows you to go work on other aspects of the game. Because, I mean, as you know, I mean, there is no necessarily perfect golf swing, but mm-hmm. we all could get caught into trying to find it, which I've been guilty of, and other areas of the game get neglected.
Yeah, for sure. I've been teaching a fair amount since I stopped playing, and I've been, you know, focusing a lot on the leg work. That seems to put the arms in better positions, and they don't want to early extend as much if they keep the leg, you know, underneath them better. But I was looking through your, you know, just, you know, chronologically, just your golfing life, and you came up and obviously turned pro in 2000, and what a cool time. And you got the whole 2000s, 2010s. And it's just, what was that experience like during that golf boom and being a part of it? And, you know, obviously the Tiger era and everything, and you were fully immersed in it the whole time. Like, what was that like in the early 2000s and your experience?
It was truly incredible. Like, when I look back on it, I probably didn't even understand it and appreciate it at the time near what I do now. Turning pro at 2000, obviously it was the middle of the Tiger boom. He'd won the Masters in 97, but it was kept increasing and going up. And in 2000, it was just a massive golf year. And it was even from like the endorsement world. So many corporations and companies were going towards golf for sponsorships and partnerships. And to turn pro there, the PGA Tour, the purses were just starting to feel the Tiger effect, if you will. The purses were growing. And man, from 2000 through, well, really till 2008, golf was crazy. I mean, it really was. From the purse were going up, but the endorsement side of it, just the Tiger mania, really all of it. Golf Channel was really taking off and growing big then as well. I don't think there could have been a better time to turn pro, from the excitement that Tiger brought to the game to the way golf was being covered. It wasn't covered on social media near to the degree that it is now, but mm-hmm. man, on some outlets that we had at the time, Tiger really, no disrespect to those that came before him, but Tiger really put golf on the big, national stage map, so to speak.
Yeah, I kind of like, I prefer the way it was covered then. I mean, now you don't really have to flip it on Saturday and Sunday on CBS to see your favorite players or who's in contention. You just kind of pop it as you're doing whatever you're doing on the app, or, you know, you get updates. But back then, I mean, it seems like, I know the crowd pretty huge, but back then, I mean, man, like you just playing in front of hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, at Phoenix and in the U.S. Open that you played in and things like that. I mean, I loved the way it was covered back then. Like, was the media presence like way different back then? I would assume it had to be a little heavier with like how many media credentials were handed out and how many reporters were there and things like that.
Well, it was, and it was largely different then too, because Tiger had just attracted in this whole new even media person, right? Like, these people that really haven't covered golf were now covering golf. I remember back at the 2002 U.S. Open at Bethpage. My goodness. I mean, I've just never seen a venue as such, as many people that were out there, the Tiger mania full crazy going. That's when golf was like, holy cow, this is now a big, cool sport. Tiger crossed so many lines for us in there that where it's like, man, golf is cool now. And, I was lucky enough to play a lot of practice rounds with him. And even, I remember back to some of the British Open practice rounds we would play. It gets light so early over there in the summer that he'd want to tee off really early. So we tee off at 6 a.m., on Tuesday morning, and you could see all these swarms of people coming in to watch him play a practice round. I mean, it really was amazing what the guy did to the game of golf. I mean, truly incredible.
Yeah, I mean, and it seems like you were one of the, first, like, really, because just from what I remember in 2000, I mean, you won national championship shooting a million under that year. In 2000, and it seems like you were one of the first guys that, got the big contracts. Weren't you a Callaway guy right out of the gate too?
Yep, Callaway.
Yeah, and it just seems like that was just a big deal. Like, I mean, you had a lot of coverage around you as well, and obviously, Tiger brought you in the circle and let you play practice rounds with him. And was that kind of a pretty standard thing? Like, tee off at 6 a.m., 6:45, play with Tiger. And I mean, how often did stuff like that happen for you early in your career?
Oh, yeah. So I was extremely lucky. Tiger was wonderful to me. We would play, every tournament that we were both in, we'd play every Tuesday morning. We would always tee off before 7 a.m. And the rule was no hitting range balls before. So we had to go straight to the first tee and tee off. And, I didn't really understand. It's VM. Like, why are we playing so early? Like, what? But it was his only time to be somewhat like normal and quiet around it. By 8:30, 9 o'clock, all the fans and the media and all the people, had made their way in. But it was so difficult for him just to be normal. It was everything that he did was under scrutiny. Tuesday morning practice trials, people are watching and judging what he's doing. And, I remember the times we would go to dinner together, and as soon as he'd walk in the door of the restaurant, people recognize him and the place just goes quiet. And, it's truly, when I get that lens to all the things that he was able to accomplish, it's truly amazing. I remember he told me multiple times that Charles, if it was as quiet around me as it is you, I'd play 25, 28 times a year. And I was like, I get it. Like, I mean, because 1 week for Tiger must feel like two or three to me.
Obligations, Lord have mercy.
It was everything. It was just, it was everything that he did. And the level of golf he played amongst all that was truly amazing.
Yes. And I mean, you were like a big deal too. I mean, obviously we're harping on Tiger a lot here, but I mean, I remember all the coverage around you. I mean, you had to have done a million press conferences and had to do a lot of sponsor value and whatever. I mean, earlier, you were fully exempt starting in 2001, because I know you're rookie at the end of 2001.
That's correct. So, it's like, I mean, I did play nice golf and I did some good things, but I was definitely the beneficiary of the Tiger Woods era. And there's no doubt about it. And, I remember that the group of us that came out that year, it was like myself, Adam Scott, Matt Kuchar, David Bryce Mulder, Edward Lord in Oklahoma State. So there was a group of us that came out at the time, and we were all beneficiaries of Tiger Woods. There's no doubt about it. And if there was a Tiger tax imposed on us today, and it was retroactive 20 years, we still should pay it. It's he helped us all.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky just to play. I played 4 years out there, and then, you know, I mean, obviously I got to experience a little bit of it. I didn't get to play as nearly as many events against him as obviously you did, or the legends of the game that kept their cards for 22 years like you did. But every event that he was there, or Phil even, I mean, you obviously had some epic battles with Phil Mickelson too.
Yes.
And you beat Phil in the LA Open 1 year, right?
Yeah. So I did at the playoff at the Riviera at the LA Open.
I remember that like it was yesterday. I was so pumped to see you win that one. And I was pumped to see the 2018 victory at the RSM. I mean, I was looking ahead. What is it, 98 top tens or something? It's something just staggering. Yeah. Your record is unbelievable. And every time I got to play paired with you or Lucas Glover, I was always just like, yes. Because y'all are always just so complimentary and cool. So I've been lucky enough to have both of you on the podcast. But how's the transition been? I mean, I think what's happening in golf right now is really exciting and good for everybody. And I think it's, you know, they're going to be very beneficial. Now you get to spend a lot more time with your family and your son and help him, you know, cultivate a career and everything. How's everything going, making the switch?
So, yeah, it's been wonderful for me. Yeah, I'm 43 years old, and so, you know, I get to play, you know, 14 times a year on the LIV League. And we go to some fun venues. Our schedule next year looks really good. And yeah, you know, I know that it's a hot button topic, and there's, you know, opinions all over the board on it. But ultimately, it's good for the game of golf, where you have a whole new group of people now interested in golf and growing the game of golf. And I mean, look at what Eugenio did a few weeks back in Bangkok, where, you know, he comes out of college and he wins a golf tournament for $4 million. And he has a nest egg now to go play the rest of his career. And so, I mean, listen, it's like I said, it's been absolutely wonderful for me. The team concept is fun, where, you know, Bryson is the captain of the team that I play on. And so it's Bryson, Paul Casey, myself, and Anirban Lahiri. And, you know, having guys that you play practice rounds together with, and, you know, you're sort of, you know, bouncing ideas off of one another. And I think next year that the team concept will come a little bit more into the fold, and people will understand it and follow that bit better. But it's been a lot of fun. It's been a good, transition for me.
Yeah, I watched something where Taylor Gooch and Pat Perez were deciding on what club Pat Perez was going to hit on a par three. And it just seemed like a pretty, you know, cool kind of camaraderie type thing. And, you know, you got the music out there. Is the music blaring like the whole time? Is there like a central location for that? Or like how's that? I know they say it's golf, it's professional golf, but louder. Yeah. Like, what does that entail? Like, where are the tunes?
So yes, there is music, and it plays on every hole throughout the entire tournament. So there's speakers embedded in the TV cameras, sort of the towers behind each green.
Yeah.
So there's speakers inside there, and there's speakers in random areas on the golf course if those speakers don't cover it. But yes, at all times, when you're a fan that comes to a live event, there's music playing everywhere. And you know, which is great because it's a lot more relaxed. Families bring their kids out. Their kids can run and scream and play and have a big time. They're not worried about, you know, keeping them quiet and that sort of thing. The fan build outs are fantastic, where there's all kinds of stuff for them to do. And it really is focused around a more, let's call it fun event, if you will, where the fans I've spoke to and the friends we've had out to events have loved Three.
A little more immersive.
It's correct. And, you know, everybody's playing at the same time. So, and you know, for the most part, barring injury or something crazy, you know, the 48 guys that show up. So if you're a big Dustin Johnson fan or Cam Smith, you know, he's going to be there. He's going to play at a certain window and you can go watch him play. Listen, it's a very neat concept. And, you, as they've said, they, you know, their goal the whole time has been to be additive to the system. And, hopefully, one day we can, work all that out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, it's kind of, I've equated it to like, I mean, it's going to help the players. It's going to, obviously the purses have already gone up, but I equate it kind of like the gas tours, like the tours just compete a little bit and everything just kind of, it just goes up, up and up and up, and the tour has reacted. And, I mean, you know, there's going to be superstars no matter what. So it's not like, you know, the tour is going to be lacking in that way. You know, now you got superstars on both ends of the spectrum. So, but anyhow, I just really wanted to hear, like, I guess now a little more chronologically, like, I want to know, like, obviously you're from Golf Mecca, from Augusta. You know, who got you started playing the sport? Like, who got you so, you know, golf focused and became such a golf nut? Like, was it your dad or a grandfather? Who got you started playing?
So, funnily, yes. So I grew up in Augusta, Georgia, which is golf Mecca. Hopefully will always be golf Mecca. Oddly enough, my dad did not play the game of golf. My next door neighbor, his name was Graham Hill. We were the same age. We'd play together. Graham played, and he invited me to the golf course one day. We were 7 years old. Went to Westlake Country Club in Augusta, and we went together one day and hit range balls, and that was it. And I was hooked. And, you know, I think I liked that golf was an individual sport. I liked the fact that it, all the onus, good or bad, was on me. Just like you've experienced, right? The highest of highs and lowest of lows come from this game. And I liked that. And then, you know, my dad started playing when I started. So we sort of learned the game together, if you will. And, then later on, as I got more serious, he started playing less to help me. But that was it. It was just, funnily enough, my next door neighbor. But yeah, as you said, when you grow up in Augusta, Georgia, it's easy to play golf. You know, you're to tell all your other kids, no, I those are friends. Yeah, I play golf. I'm not going to play basketball. And they understand there.
Yeah. There's so many good players that have come out of Augusta and Aiken and those areas. It's kind of interesting. I mean, it's not an Orlando or a Jupiter or, you know, whatever, Miami, but it's just amazing how many good players have come out of Augusta Country Club or Palmetto or places like that. And I guess you're older than Kiz by a couple of years, but maybe Scott Brown is kind of close to your age. Would that to be some pretty epic battles around that area, and you had to have had a lot of guys to play against.
Oh, absolutely. And that was Augusta did such a great job with their junior golf program. And, now having a son that plays, I understand and see the importance of that, there's other kids in the area to play with, because ultimately you push one another. And I think that's what we did. It was John Engler and Scott Volpitto, Brian Scurlock, Will Snellings, and then, you know, later on, yeah, obviously Kiz came, but it was all, we all pushed each other, and ultimately the competition led to something better.
For sure. And you played a lot of AJGAs. Is that the route you took, or Southeastern Junior Tour? I don't know if Todd Thompson had started that yet. I think he probably did.
So, yes.
What was your main focus?
I did the AJGA tour. Now, back then, though, it was much smaller than it is now. It's incredible now.
Yeah, they're crazy big.
It's unbelievable how many events they have just each week. So when I did it, it was much smaller, but that's a route that I took. And, Stephen Hamlin was running the AJGA back then, and he was great to us. And, it's funny, you look back on things, and we owe so much, you know, from our local junior programs to the AJGA to getting us into college. And, you know, cause that's ultimately what you're trying to do, right? It's, yeah, you want a scholar to play college golf, and that's where you really see, if professional golf is something that you want to pursue. So yeah, every step along the way, we owe a big thank you.
Absolutely. And well, before we shift into the college career, I'm going to do a quick little live ad read, if you don't mind, sir. Just to thank one of my sponsors. Today's episode of Tour Time is brought to you by Jalen Nelson. He's a certified financial planner and chief investment officer at 4P Wealth Trust, a member of Advisory Services Network. If you're like many investors, you've been nervously watching the stock markets and wondering what will happen next, why not ease some of that anxiety? Request a second opinion with a skilled advisor who, acting as a fiduciary, can review your investments and answer any questions. 4P Wealth Trust offers in-person meetings in Georgia and Alabama and virtual appointments for those who reside out of state. Call 470-474-4798 or visit 4pwt.com/booking. 4P Wealth Trust, your future is today. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chuck. I appreciate that. Gotta have the backing for this whole thing. And they've been really good to me, and they're a local group that's helped me out. So, well, anyhow, so yeah, I forgot that Ed Lohr was on Big E and Big D. I forgot that he was on the team with you at Oklahoma State. Who else was like, what? Obviously, all won nationals. Like, what, that team was stacked. Who else was on the squad that year?
So there was a player out of Dallas, Landry Mahan, really good ball striker, hit it dead straight. He was awesome. JC DeLeon was on the team. He was from Tulsa. And then Anders Holt, so was a Swedish player, really good player, great short game. And, you know, so oddly enough, just Edward and I ended up, you know, playing on the PGA Tour. But, you know, in college golf was great because it really makes you grow up. I mean, that's the first time where you're traveling with a team, but you're really traveling by yourself. Yeah, your parents aren't there with you. And you're figuring golf courses out, you know, with a team, but by yourself. And, you know, college golf is, my goodness, I can't say enough about it, where, the level of competitiveness of it, how good the players were then, how good they are now, getting more coverage on television now, which I think is a great thing. And, man, I mean, just the collective body of college golf has done just an unbelievable job.
They have, and their practice facilities are just absolutely insane. I mean, the one at Texas is crazy. I assume your facility at Oklahoma State when you were there was pretty amazing. Was it good? It was in Stillwater.
It was. So we played at a golf course, Karsten Creek, and it's still there. Wonderful. But you're right. I mean, you look now at the amount of money being spent on the venues that they have, the practice areas, the golf course, the amenities to it. It's truly amazing. Where, you know, in college golf, it's the pathway to the professional leagues. And, you know, whether you see it with the LIV league, where we have James Piatt, Turk Pettit, and Eugenio come out of college there, to, you know, other guys. So like the, you know, Pearson Cootie, et cetera, and, you know, Cole Hammer decide to go the PGA, route. It's wonderful, right? So it's more options for these kids, which they deserve, and it's more options for pro golf. So I think the way the college golf system set up right now really is awesome.
Yeah. So did you got your exemptions via winning nationals? Did you finish highly? And looking through your stories and results and everything, I couldn't find anything for USGA events. What was the farthest you ever made it in? Like, did you play, maybe you didn't play pub links, but like in the USM, did you ever take it deep in the AM?
So the US Junior, I lost in the finals and semifinals. The US Amateur, the furthest I got along there was the quarterfinals. Nice. And I never got further than that.
It's pretty far though.
My claim to fame though there is I was one of Tiger's victims. I lost to Tiger at Pumpkin Ridge when he was on that tear. I think he beat Steve Scott that year in the finals, but I was one of his victims that year in his three in a row.
How old were you at the time? Like 16 or 17?
I think I was 16. Yes.
Wow. And then that, what round was that?
I think it was the third round. It was second or third round that I lost him. I lost 2-1. I do remember that. Was hard headed enough to think I should have beat him, which I mean I knew better, but I when I played with him, I'd never seen a guy hit it so high and so far with the driver. I just remember that. I can even still remember some of the tee shots he hit. It was just is incredible how far he hit the ball. And you know, us as kids growing up, I mean, it was always like, yeah, you know, kind of hit it in the fairway and have a good short game and do all these things. And then you watch Tiger do it, like, oh my gosh, this guy hits it far and straight. Like, oh, we haven't seen this before. And I mean, obviously it was the start of him changing golf, I think. But yeah, it was pretty big influence on me play, although I did lose to him. To catch a glimpse of the way the game was going was pretty big for me at that point in my career.
Yeah, dude. I mean, that what clubs did you play with at the time? Were you like a Hawkeye guy? Were you Callaway, or did you play the PT? Like, you remember how small the driver heads were? What driver were you using?
I was
back
a
then?
Ping. So I played ping irons, but at the time, you know, they really weren't big into metalwood. So I played the Callaway drivers. So that was like the, remember like the Big Bertha and the Great Big Bertha, all that kind of stuff. Yep. And then in college, Payne came out with that tie, the ISI driver.
I got that for Christmas 1 year.
Exactly. I played that one. And obviously then, you know, it was, you know, Payne and Callaway back and forth. But nowadays, like golf equipment, they're all good. Right? Like you look around and these R&D departments and the technology have just gotten so good where it's so much more, in my opinion, about club fitting than the actual club, because you look around, I mean, you can't really say a bad thing about any, really.
Oh, no. I mean, Ryan Armour is one of my, he's one of my buddies. And, once he got dialed in with those PXG irons, I mean, his career just had a you know, the second or third coming, and, he ended up getting that win. You played the PXG irons for a little bit, didn't you?
I did. They were fantastic. I was always impressed with their engineers. You know, Brad Schweigert and Mike Nicolette, that came from Ping to PXG to work there. I thought they were fantastic and they were awesome. They've always built great stuff. And yes, they will continue to do good stuff because they're just two really smart, good people.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and out on the live, is it just one big truck out there, or how does that work with the clubs? I mean, I know, I'm sure you have every opportunity to get anything you need, but like, is it one main facility, or how does the club fitting work?
So that's exactly what it is. It's one big trailer. I believe it might have been Callaway's old trailer they bought. Anyway, yes, it's obviously been repainted and refit, and it's awesome. And they have everything in there that you would ever need. It stays the entire week too, which is, I think, another benefit. You know, as you know, on tour, the trailers leave on Wednesday. Well, if you break something on Friday, that's when you really need it. So trailer does stay with us all week. Now, we're at the overseas event. So like this year, I'll say in Bangkok and Jeddah, they don't have the trailer there, but they have a room set up there. So everywhere we go, they have all that stuff taken care of. They've got whatever you may need. And the guys are great. And honestly, it's easier. There's only 48 of us. So if you do want to get work done, are the trailers wide open?
Yeah, there's not like a long line. And as far as like traveling to the events, obviously everybody's seen the cool plane do you get to fly on that every time, or how does that work?
No. So actually I haven't been on it. So no, we're responsible for our travel. Liv pays for it, but we're responsible to book it and that sort of thing. So no, we haven't been on that the big plane yet. Maybe we'll have that once or twice next year. But no,
that just like reserved for the winter or something.
Well, in that case, that plane was going over to JP McManus's pro-am. So after they flew a bunch of the Liv guys over to Ireland for his pro-am. But yeah, I mean, listen, they always take care of us. I mean, if there's ever remotely an issue, they have it handled and solved. And like I said, they've been wonderful.
Yeah, and is there a pro-am every week? Because I know they have the little pairings party, or you know,
yeah.
little thing on Wednesday night or maybe Tuesday night. But what night is the dinner or whatever, where everybody gets dressed up?
So every Wednesday night, it's the Pro-Am pairings party, if you will. And we all attend that. But they're awesome. I mean, these parties are over the top. They're really impressive. And then their Pro-Am is on Thursday and the tournament's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So, but yeah, I mean, hey, it's, you know, Nelly came out to one of the Pro-Am parties and started playing. I mean, it's just, it, we were at the Pro-Am party in Thailand, TLC came out, and they play. Wow. So listen, they do a wonderful job with it, and the AMs love it. And we have a good day in the Pro-Am, cause the Pro-Am is two pros and two amateurs. So, they get, you know, they get pros to play with, and it's a fun day.
Yeah, that is cool. TLC, as in Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls, TLC.
Did, buddy. Yeah,
that's awesome. Did. Yeah, that's our era. I mean, I'll be 37 next year. So, I mean, I was 15, 16 when in 2000 when you were coming up. So I remember. I mean, yeah, the way that's Eminem and Limp Bizkit and all that stuff.
Yes, but, I remember those days.
Oh yeah, TLC. That's back when MTV was actually worth watching.
Exactly.
But so when do you get cranked up? Are you going again? And it's February, right? Is that when you get
Yeah, February we start back up, and we actually started Mayakoba, which was we played there on the PGA Tour, and it's a great spot. It's you know, the guys are excited for it. You know, it's obviously it's a wonderful venue. Yeah, you can't say enough about it, and. I know they were there with the PGA Tour for many years. So, yeah, it's a good spot. And, yeah, we start there and then get rolling. So, we have our international this year, obviously Mexico. And then we go to Singapore and Australia. And then the summertime, we go to London and Spain. So, we've got some nice international destinations in there as well, which is fun. I mean, for someone like myself that played so many years on the PGA Tour, it's nice to... you know, to play other parts of the world, especially here towards the, you know, end-ish of my career, it's going to see other parts of the world.
Yeah. And you're always, at 25, 28, 30, 33. I mean, you played so many events out there. It's crazy. So it's gotta be nice to just kind of, you know, dial it back and, I'm sure you're still grinding hard, but just slow down a little bit.
Well, it is. I mean, yeah, you don't, I mean, I'm 43 now and you don't realize it, but like recovery is important. Rest times is important. And it's sometimes we don't want to admit that. But yeah, it's the schedule is fantastic. And listen, hopefully it keeps growing. It keeps getting bigger and taking off and we get more fans.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had some friends go to the event in Miami and they said they had a fantastic time. So, I mean, I think that one was when everything was really catching on. It was the event in Miami was that one of the biggest ones when it came to the crowd size?
It was. We had a big crowd in Chicago and Boston, which those crowds were fantastic. But, Miami was Miami, which was, it was great. It was loud. There was a lot of music. A lot of people showed up, especially on the Saturday and Sunday. It was awesome. And I'm glad to hear that your buddy said that because, yeah, that's what they want. Ultimately, they want the fan to have a great experience and a great time. See it as a bit of a party, if you will, or a festival, as I think some of the words they use, to where not like a run of the mill stuck up golf tournament, but it's a fun experience.
Absolutely. Well, cool. Well, so what are you working on now? I was actually having a conversation with a guy earlier from Downshift Golf. Just gotten one of those little, weight transfer boards. And I was just kind of thinking about, just your swing and stuff. And I was just wondering, what kind of things you might be working on at this current moment, if it's just kind of staying the same or if there's anything that you're working on, particularly with your golf swing.
So, with me, in my golf swing, what I'm actually spending a lot of time on is a lot of different skill building stuff. So, I'll pick a situation. A certain yardage on the driving range and learn hit some draws and hit some fades. And then I'll switch the club up, switch the target, draws and fades. Then I'll go into the golf course and I'll try to find situations with certain wind directions or hole locations that make me uncomfortable and then practice that. So I'm always, I'm trying to ultimately get around to how do I learn to shoot a lower score? I am guilty of working on things, but yet not really tying it into, okay, this is wonderful, but how do we shoot lower? So I'm trying to be more disciplined in that area, a little more focused on that. So whether it's my short game work or long game work, to have it an end kind of result of a goal or a challenge, if you will, that ultimately hopefully leads to a lower score.
Yeah. So when you, interesting, you talk about a little wind direction. So if you have a pond on the right and you got 20 blown out of the left, are you a guy that's aiming away from the water and you're going to kind of ride it? Or are you going to kind of stay aggressive and try to fight it? Or what do you think about when you have that wind and maybe a little bit of trouble that it's blowing towards, type thing?
So I'm generally speaking, I'm a guy that doesn't love to fight the wind either direction. I want to kind of use the wind as my friend in knowing what direction it won't go. So if I'm always riding the wind, I generally have an idea of where my miss will be.
Yeah.
Now, with wind is blowing into trouble, then that's a different deal. So, but that's a scenario where I'm probably going to aiming a bit away from it and then try to curb it into. But I've never been a big believer of starting the ball into trouble or even near trouble. You absolutely have to. But overall, from playing college golf in Oklahoma, I think you learn a bit to use the wind as your friend as opposed to trying to find it all the time.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine y'all played some, did you play the event at Shoal Creek when you were at Oklahoma State?
I didn't, no. So yeah. when I played the event in Alabama, it had moved to another venue there in Birmingham. Is there a labor league? Okay. Old Overton. That was it. Yes, and it was wonderful. Yeah, it was good golf course. I missed the Shoal Creek.
Okay. Yeah, that was the Jerry Pate Intercollegiate.
That was it. Exactly. Yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah. I played that one a couple times when I was at UAB. Well, cool, dude. Well, we got a good 45 minutes in, and I appreciate the heck out of it. And I think everybody got to hear a lot of cool stuff, and I just really appreciate you. Taking a little bit of time out of your day, and this has been really, really neat.
Well, listen. Well, thank you. Well, like I said, you've got how to get a hold of me, and you call, reach out anytime. And best of luck to you. And I hope we cross paths next year.
Yeah, brother. I hope to see you down the road. And thanks again for hopping on to your time.
No, you got it, buddy. Have a great afternoon.
All right, you as well.
All right, boss. All right, see ya.
See ya. All right, that was really cool talking to Chucky Three Sticks. A very cool episode. Episode 41 of Gear Time is done. I didn't want to take him away from family time too much. Try to be, respectful of that. And anyhow, I hope you guys enjoyed. Everybody stay dear. See ya.